Do you know anything about the Candace Queen that defeated Augustus?
It's quite likely that it was Amani Rainus. If you look at the images, if you just Google Meroitic Queen, Cushite Queen, you'll see images of very voluptuous, statuesque, thick, if you will, women.
So she was a brick house, in other words.
Yes, you know, I laugh because I keep waiting to work up the urge to play the Commodore's Brick House when I give a lecture about these Meroitic.
The excerpts you just heard are from my upcoming continuing series of interviews with Dr. Solange Ashby, the first Black female Egyptologist in 221 years of the discipline. Stay tuned.
Doc, do you know anything about the Candace Queen that defeated Augustus?
Yes, so it's not 100% sure which of these five amazing queens who ruled basically back to back in the first century before Christ and the first century after the birth of Christ, but it's quite likely that it was Amani Rainus. She is likely the one who is referred to in Acts of the Apostles from the New Testament as the Queen Candace. And that was, you know, the New Testament was originally written in Greek. So this is Greek writers trying to render the Meroitic title Kandake into their language. And so we get Candace. And so for any of our listeners, if that's your name or the name of anyone you know, it's a very prestigious name with long history from the kingdom of Meroe.
And so she defeats Augustus in a military campaign.
They go head to head a couple of times. I think 29 before Christ, and then again around 21 before Christ. There are military conflicts as the Romans, Augustus's troops, are trying to push south into Nubia. They had just conquered Egypt upon the suicide of Cleopatra the VII. And so they try to continue going south. And this amazing warrior queen meets them in battle just south of the Dodekaskoino, so just south of that lower Nubia area that we've been talking about. And it's more like a stalemate. At least this is how Augustus tells us, right? And we have yet to be able to read the Meroitic script, the texts that tell us about this battle. But suffice it to say that the Romans didn't end up going any further south than this site called Qasr Ibrim, that they stopped trying to impose taxes, oppressive taxes on the Meroitic people. And in fact, they started paying the kingdom of Meroe essentially to say, all right, no more attacking into Egypt here. We're paying you to stay south of this border. So clearly she was very successful in her battle against the Romans.
So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to another segment of Reclaiming History with Dr. Solange Ashby, PhD, Egyptologist, Nubiologist, and we're talking about her new book, Calling Out to ISIS, The Enduring Nubian Presence at Philae, published by Gorgias Press.
That's G-O-R-G-I-A-S Press.com.
So geographically, where would this imaginary line be on a map based on today's geography where the Romans actually stopped their assault into Nubia?
The town, the city that is sort of the southern border of Roman Egyptian controlled Nubia is called Maharaka, and that is still in today in modern day Egypt. Egypt's southern border is at probably at the Second Cataract, which is just an area of the Nile that has rapids in it. But if anyone's traveled to Abu Simbel, that amazing temple of Ramses the Great far south in Nubia, it's still north of that. So somewhere north of the Sudanese border.
So is it true that she was a one-eyed queen?
That's what Strabo tells us, the historian who wrote in Greek, right? And I like to imagine that she was a warrior queen. And unlike Augustus, who was sending his generals into battle, she had her generals, but she also was leading the charge. And I like to imagine that she was one-eyed because she probably was injured in battle. He also calls her mannish, which for a Roman is the ultimate insult. But if you look at the images, if you just Google Meroitic queen, Cushite queen, you'll see images of very voluptuous, statuesque, thick, if you will, women. And so that was considered beautiful and a sign of power. And Meroites were really okay with powerful women. But for the Romans, they were really terribly misogynistic. And that was something that was just horrifying to them, that there would not only be a sole ruling queen and she would be leading her troops into battle, but that she was proudly a big, thick woman and very curvaceous.
So she was a brick house, in other words.
Yes, you know, I laugh because I keep waiting to work up the urge to play the Commodore's brick house when I give a lecture about these Meroitic. Yes, she was.
And just the fact of her fighting and leading her army engenders fear in the hearts of men, right?
Yeah. Yes.
In the hearts of men that they go running because here she comes, this brick house, and she is fighting mad. And unlike the story that we hear, everyone knows the story of Cleopatra, how she used an asp to poison, you know, to bite herself and she dies suicidal. Mm-hmm. No, instead, he runs into this queen in southern Egypt, and she says, bring it.
Yes.
Bring it.
The Romans were already freaked out by Cleopatra. She was just too much of a wild woman for them. So you'd know they lost it when they ran into a Minos.
It was the true origins of misogynoir, right?
Yes.
Historically. So listen, Dr. Solange Aspe, it has been such a pleasure to have you on the show talking about your book, Calling Out to ISIS, the Enduring Nubian Presence at Philae. Dr. Ashby, is there anything else that you want our listeners to know about your work or anything new that you're getting ready to start?
Yes. I'm really pleased to say that I've been awarded a President's Postdoc Fellowship at UCLA. And so this is going to allow me to really read, research, and write for a year or two. And I will be publishing a second book specifically about these Cushite queens and Nubian women in particular. And then when I'm done with that postdoc, I will start teaching at UCLA. I'll start a tenure track position there. And my goal really, and I'm just going to keep speaking it into existence, is to establish the first ever doctoral program in Nubiology. Because at this point, sadly, there's not one in the entire world, but look for one sometime in the next few years at UCLA.
Dr. Solange Aspe, you are a value to the field of Egyptology. You are a value to the field of studying African cultures. We are so honored that you agreed to be on this segment of Reclaiming History with Livonia Mallory. Thank you for coming on. I appreciate you so much.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.